from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
We are so happy that you have joined us on the G and Ursula Show on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. G is off today. Mike Lewis is in, going into the second hour. How are you feeling, Mike?
I'm feeling pretty good. I am actually, like we said earlier, kind of impressed. I feel like today is turning a corner. I'm going to go ahead and jinx it. It feels like, at least it feels like maybe spring is getting ready to give us a phone call, if not actually arrive.
Exactly. And you know what's so funny? Why do we do this to ourselves every single year?
Every year.
Every year. As if it's something new.
I know.
I think the anticipation is just so sweet.
And the desperation.
Yes. Okay, coming up after Heather's newscast at 10:30, we have just confirmed that Mike Salk from Seattle Sports 710 is going to be joining us, and we are going to be talking about Geno Smith. I did see a lot of your comments on our text line about whether you think this is a good deal.
And it's not easy to get Mike Salk on your show, as we found out that it took someone with a lot of gravitas and connections to pull Mike Salk in, and that's Ursula.
He was ignoring
the entire show. He was ignoring this side of the newsroom, and then Ursula just says, oh, I'll text him in 5 seconds he responds.
Thank you, Mike. We love it when he's on the show. Okay,
absolutely.
Let's get going, though.
What's new at 10?
And you know who else we love on the show is our reporter, Matt Markovich.
And you had to talk to my agent several times to get me here today, right?
Got to twist his arm. Okay, yesterday we were talking about this bill that passed the Senate late on Friday, the state Senate, that would make drug possession a gross misdemeanor in Washington. It would also give more flexibility to help offenders get treatment. But just as soon as I got off the air, you were saying, hey, I heard your discussion. You didn't mention XYZ.
Yeah. There is a lot to unpack here. You heard like a headline, okay, it's a gross misdemeanor. Basically, it's a misdemeanor now where if you really wanted to, a judge can send somebody to jail for 90 days for possession if they refuse treatment twice. That law has been in effect for a year. Nobody's tracked that. The legislature has admitted that nobody has actually followed whether someone's gotten treatment twice or been offered twice and then went to jail. There's nobody tracking that. They have no data on that at all. So what they did is basically the headline is that they're going to have this drug possession law. It's a gross misdemeanor, which means up to a year in jail. But there's a lot to it. And why I wanted to talk about that, because as I've been following this legislative session, we're at day 58 right now. The only bill that I've seen where Republicans and Democrats actually voted their conscience and not the party line was this bill in the Senate. It was 28-21, 14 Democrats, 14 Republicans joined to vote for it. And it meant 15 other Democrats voted against it. I mean, so there was no party line vote at all in this bill. And there's a lot to unpack. And I think I just want to play a quick soundbite from Democratic Senator Mark Mullett. He kind of explains how it works, so it kind of sets the stage.
You actually have four different attempts to get into treatment. And if none of those work, the judge has full discretion on that first arrest around whether or not you actually spend a single day in jail. You may not spend any time in jail.
And I think that basically sets it up. They're going to have these opportunities for someone who gets picked up for possession of any amount of illegal drugs, Class A, and that at any point in this process, before a trial, the pretrial diversion, they call it, during any kind of any time of proceeding, the person could opt into treatment and stay there. But then there's all these minutiae things. Okay, so they stay in treatment. What does the bill have to say about staying in treatment? What are the words? The words, and this is going to be one of those legal terms, the words are that they substantially comply with treatment.
Okay.
It's like
so
reasonable.
You can't jump in and then jump out and say, I've done it, so you can now wipe my
correct. You know, and the whole thing is if you go through all this and even go to jail, let's just say, you can then go back into treatment. And then if you complete it, they vacate the record. So it's like it never happened. You get four options, four ways to exit out of your crime of possessing drugs here. But then you had somebody like Senator. And the one thing I was going to tell you that what they added to this bill, because you're technically, and this is what the person has to figure out, you're technically a substance abuse user. The court has to define you as a substance abuse user, and then they send you the treatment. Well, once you define that, you can't have any guns. The guns have to be taken away immediately. So that's another something for the accused to think about. Do I want to lose my guns immediately if I go through this treatment process?
So you're saying that that could act as a deterrent.
Like, right. I mean, that's my opinion. It's like they added that to this bill here. This is the flavoring that the Senate added to get these votes. You know, they want to make some people, and they felt like neither side was happy about it. And that's why they think it's a good compromise.
So, what do we know about where the governor is on this? If it moves through, is it an automatic signing, or is it because it is so clearly a polarizing bill?
Yeah,
is the governor leaning toward it or against her? Have they?
No, he says he wants to sign something. Well, they have to sign something because on July 1st, it goes back to what the Supreme Court decided. We don't have a drug possession law on July 1st. If they don't put something in play here, the current bill sunsets. And current law sunsets, and we go right to if you want to have a pound of cocaine, walk around downtown, and you don't intend to sell it, you're fine. You know, that's what
so
we
how,
have.
I mean, how does it get to a pound of cocaine? I mean, that's not what we're talking
kilo,
about.
Sorry, kilo. I got to use the right term.
Yeah,
narco.
That's not what we're talking about when it comes to drug possession. It's supposed to be small amounts of for your own use.
Personal use. From
yeah,
personal
right. But
use.
There is no definition of in the statute that... basically, you know, the Supreme Court threw out the whole drug possession law. There isn't one. And so they've been trying to put something in place to have something there.
So this is the fix.
This is the fix that's going through right now. And now it's going to go to the House and it's going to be amended and changed a little bit. But I think there's little things in here that they're going to try and figure out, like I talked about, substantially comply. You know, it's one of those terms like, well, how do you prove if they're going to go this route and the state's going to pay for all this, you know, this drug treatment? And that's just a whole nother thing.
Are they, though?
Well,
that was one of my questions is who pays for treatment.
So this bill, the fiscal note tied to this bill is $3 million. But then you had the lawmakers on both sides saying, nah, it's going to be tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's the $3 million is not realistic.
Yeah, no, it's not realistic at all. And another thing that's not realistic, and I thought this was an excellent argument. I don't have a sound from her. For Monica Dingra, who fought this, you know, she thinks you should have personal possession. That's where she's coming from. Very powerful Democratic state senator. She believes that people should have personal amounts. She's in that camp. But she says, because she's a former prosecutor, saying, you know what? This is not going to work in the real world. Not at all. At all. Because when someone has a possession of a drug, there's probably 3 to 4 other crimes that are tied to that incident. And they're going to be going to court for that. So how do you mix in this? Okay, I'm going to go to court anyway. Maybe I stole a car in order to sell it to buy my drug, whatever. There's always going to be other crimes. And so she says this bill is totally impractical in the real world. It will not mean a thing because it's one little aspect of someone's bigger picture of why they were arrested.
Well, what are police agencies saying about this? Because we're still talking about multiple attempts to get someone into treatment. We're still talking. It's so nuanced that with these stress, it's almost easier just to, I'm not going to deal with it at all.
Well, I mean, the cops right now are dealing with a system where they have to not once, but twice offer that same person, if they catch them twice, treatment before they arrest them for a misdemeanor. So the onus is still on the cops then to offer treatment, but there's just different exits in the legal process on where a person could go to treatment. They're trying to do everything they can to get someone into treatment. And eventually, when it comes down to it, when you hear this gross misdemeanor, you're in jail, basically that's sending a person to jail for refusing treatment. They had 4 shots at it. And you know what? Since you didn't complete it, you're not going to go to treatment. We're going to put you in jail. So essentially, you're sending a person to jail for not completing treatment.
Well, actually, I mean that you can see some of the logic behind that.
Yes,
though.
I'm not.
That's always been the problem is that currently people don't complete treatment and there is no penalty. So so this actually adds maybe a fairly strong incentive. You don't want to go back in jail. You have to actually move through this process of treatment. The problem, of course, being that I don't know how many times you can actually go through treatment and get your record purged, which isn't clear in the bill. And I don't know that this necessarily, like pushing this bill through, makes a whole lot of sense. If what we're trying to do is just shore up existing law based on the Supreme Court decision, I would probably do something more narrowly crafted, take care of that, and then try and handle these things in maybe different legislation.
I find it also interesting that there were more Democrats who voted against it. Mm-hmm. It was that, is that presumably because they think it's too tough or it's criminalizing?
No, the Democrat. Addiction? So I would tell you about Mankar Dhingra. The Democrats as a whole, if you had to put a needle on everything, obviously everything's to the left, and the left would be personal amounts. So they don't want, they want treatment only. No, trying to decriminalize that. Oh. So the Republicans want a bigger hammer. The Democrats don't want a bigger hammer. And so that's why you see more Democrats voting against this, because they think, oh, what's this really going to do? It forces treatment. We like that. But we don't want any hammer at all. Where the Republicans, like Senator Patton, who is leading the Republican charge, he wants to go back to what it was before the Supreme Court ruling, which is it's a felony. You go to jail. You got it on you. You go to jail for a felony, not a misdemeanor.
Hmm.
Yeah, but so the argument has maintained the Democrats' argument against it, which is based on years and years of problems with selective enforcement for personal use amounts, including people who got fairly serious prison time for just having a small amount of marijuana on them. Now, obviously, you can't do that anymore because it's been legalized. So it does make some sense. The problem is establishing what is a personal use amount, right? Because that has not been, from state to state, has, and even from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, has not been consistently applied. And that makes some sense of why there'd be so many people, you know, why this would be such a polarizing bill.
Well, the other part of it is what happens so often is in trying to solve a problem that goes so far to the extreme that it has negative consequences, which I believe this has had. So I am actually on the side of the Republicans who want to put something in there and maybe some teeth in there.
Right.
I mean, and there are certainly like four chances to get treatment. I think that's reasonable.
That's a lot of chances. I have another big question on this, though. What happens if there are no treatment beds? Because I could foresee a circumstance in which we could end up like we're in with the with Western State, where, hey, somebody needs treatment. There's no capacity for them, but we can't do anything with them. So they're just going to go right back out on the street.
That's an excellent question. And actually, it's addressed in the bill somewhat. What this also does, and the cities and the counties aren't going to like this, is tell the cities and counties, lift your zoning protections. We want you to put drug centers in those neighborhoods, even as going as far as a supervised injection site, saying, okay, cities and counties, you have to play a role here. We were going to spend some money. You got allowed us to have these drug treatment centers, and you hear, when you hear about one, the neighbors go nuts.
Oh, you mean like the one in Linwood?
Yeah.
Acadia Health, yes.
Yeah. Opioid treatment centers is specifically addressed in this bill, and it says cities and counties, you have to let that happen. This is your part, and this is your role to play. So, see, that's why I said this bill has a lot. I mean, we are in a headline. You hear about it in 30 seconds, but I'm telling you all the little nuances here.
So you think it has a chance to make it through? Some version has a chance to make it through the House and then get to the governor's desk?
Yes. And the reason why is they have a gun to their head, so to speak, with the current bill expiring July 1st.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go back to for a full year of, hey, there's no drug possession law at all.
Yeah. Okay, so we've only got a couple of minutes left, Matt. Tell us what else is controversial but still alive in Olympia.
Well, I'm just going to look at what's just happening right now. So this is yesterday. This was very controversial. Cities can allow up to a 10% tax on Airbnbs to pay for homeless housing. So that's one that was very close in a vote. I talked about the warehouse workers. That was a very close vote.
Okay. Remind
quotas.
Me.
So they just passed that yesterday. Very narrow margin with some Democrats joining Republicans, that large warehouses, if you have 100 people working in one warehouse or 500 people working in several warehouses in the state, it's basically Amazon. Yeah. That they have to have written quotas before they start work. They know what they have to achieve, and they have to have a speed report for that person. And they have to written lunch breaks, coffee breaks, but it's the quota system so that the employee knows what would happen if they don't meet their quota. You're going to be fired. It all has to be written out, where apparently it's not right now. It sounds like a union thing, but obviously there's no...
Like who's pushing that? Is that the employer?
The Democrats.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't imagine the unions are pretty much in favor of it. But I was just, when you were saying that, I said, it's like, oh, it sounds like essentially it's unionization through legislation, right?
Exactly. I mean, the Seattle City Council tries to do that, does that all the time. So again, that they're taking maybe a lead from Seattle City Council and providing. But that's probably going to pass. And that's a big deal for a lot of people in the state who work in those warehouses. And Republicans are saying, hey, it's going to have a triple down effect for not those, for smaller warehouses. Once you open the door for one big warehouse, it's going to start trickling down to the smaller warehouses and having these. And they're saying it's going to stop the supply chain of stuff we really want. J.T. Wilcox, who runs a bunch of warehouses, said that's a big, he knows what is going to happen. He says it's going to supply chain and things are going to cost more. Just by that simple move of requiring quotas for workers, and then you have everybody who wants to protect the workers. So that's a big controversial thing right now.
Matt,
I'm left you speechless, man.
Well, no, I'm just looking at requiring quotas. I was looking at it as that the employer saying, well, we want you to do this much work, and before you can even have a break, you need to do this.
But yeah, it sounds a little bit. The language sounds a little bit vague,
yeah.
In terms of what would be the. I mean, having very specific requirements and responsibilities in any job seems to me
reasonable.
You know, reasonable. I mean, we have them.
I think
that
the element is that this is what they want written. The key word in here is it all written down before the employee starts their job.
What's going to be expected? That does sound reasonable, but you can't get away with certain things.
You guys give the opinion. I threw up the softball. And you can hit it any way you want. You know. You guys,
Matt,
all three of you did a good job with that. So I just want to bring all this to your attention and allow me to. I'm glad you let me talk for a minute about this drug bill so people can understand all the little nuances to it.
Yes,
and you're
going to
be, once it goes to the House, you're going to be talking more about it because it's going to be modified there as well.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we'll bring you back for that too.
Okay.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Okay, still ahead, we've got Mike Salk joining us. We want to share some of your thoughts, too. What do you think of Geno Smith's new contract? Are you cool with it? You think it's too much? About right? We'll share that next on the G and Ursula Show. The G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Mike Lewis is in. And one of our big stories today is that Seahawks quarterback Geno Smith is going to be coming back. He has reportedly agreed to a 3-year, $105 million extension instead of hitting free agency. Is this good news? To help us put all of this in perspective, we have asked Mike Salk from the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports 710 to join us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ursula and Mike. Hello.
Good morning, Mike.
So how are you feeling about this? Is this about right, or are we paying too much for someone who is at the tail end of his career?
Well, if it was actually the way it was reported at 3 years, $105 million, I would
Thank
say
you.
They're paying too much.
Okay.
NFL contracts are funky. I'm not saying anybody said anything. There's no fake news or anything like that, but the way contracts are reported versus the way they are actually structured tends to be very different in the NFL. If Geno hits every incentive and actually plays all 3 years, he'll get $105 million. The chances of that happening, my guess is, are very small. In fact, there's only $40 million of that $105 that's guaranteed.
Oh,
so that was my question.
This is definitely a one-year deal. It might be a two-year deal. If it's a three-year deal, it's because Geno Smith is out there winning Super Bowls.
You know what it reminds me of? When we do those stories that say this crime is punishable by up to 50 years in prison, and
right,
the chances
exactly.
of that ever happening is probably close to nothing.
Very low.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about this, though. So what does this mean for the Seahawks moving forward and the upcoming draft and what the Seahawks will be looking for?
Yeah, that's what's interesting about it, is it doesn't really rule out anything. The Seahawks could absolutely still go take a quarterback early in this draft. If they like one of the young guys at the number 5 pick, they could do it. If they want to take a guy in the second or third round and bring in a competition for the long term, they can do it. And again, if they take somebody at number 5, which obviously is a pretty big commitment. And after a year, they decide, hey, this is our guy. We're ready to go with him. My guess is they'll be able to get out of the Geno Smith deal at that point. So, yeah, it hamstrings them a little bit, but not so much that they can't go do what they want to do.
Mike, it seems to me, and actually it's funny because we brought this up earlier in the show, and I said the same thing. NFL contracts are seldom reported as they actually exist in the real world because they're non-guaranteed contracts. It's always about the guaranteed money, and it looks like in this case, I think you said it's $40 million guaranteed. And if he does pay for 2 years on this contract, it's actually a pretty reasonable deal for the team, given his if his performance stays consistent with what it was last year, that seems like a fair amount of money to pay for a quarterback who is pretty competent and at times quite good.
Yeah, it probably puts them somewhere in around the number 10 spot in terms of quarterbacks in the NFL, which is probably right around where Geno was at after last year. The only thing, look, I like it for the most part. You know, I think that there's a little bit of in between here, which I'm not in love with. Generally, I want to be all in one direction or the other, either, you know, charging full steam on the next quarterback or fully building behind your quarterback that you've just paid a bunch of money to. But what this feels to me is a little bit like a bridge. And you know, I don't know if you remember, before the Chiefs became a juggernaut under Patrick Mahomes, they had Alex Smith, who was sort of in a similar camp to Geno. He was highly drafted, in his case, even higher. He's a number one overall pick, but he'd gone through some rough times. And they sort of reclaimed him there in Kansas City and got him working again. And they were paying him some similar, you know, percentage of the salary cap when they drafted Patrick Mahomes with the number 12 pick. And Mahomes sat for a year under Alex Smith, and then they moved on. And it became Mahomes' team, and obviously the rest is history. He's been to, a couple of three Super Bowls ever since then. So, that to me would be a great scenario if this ends up being similar to what happened in Kansas City.
And do you feel like, as a result of last season, and certainly with the Russell Wilson departure and then the Geno Smith stepping in and doing a good job, do you feel like it's really solidified the Seahawks brain trust idea that it is a system where multiple quarterbacks can thrive and it doesn't have to be one particular, you know, highly paid superstar?
No, in fact, that was sort of the one thing that surprised me here, Mike, is I thought if they were 100% all in on that belief, they would have rocked with Drew Lock for a fraction of the cost.
Fair enough.
I think that would have been one way to go. The flip side, though, and I think the reason they ultimately did this, not because they don't believe in their system, but because the marginal difference was not that extreme. It's not the $35 million a year it was originally reported at. And so if it was, I would say it's a bad deal. Like, that's not believing in your system. In this case, what it seems like you're doing is you're valuing Geno's place in the locker room, what it means to his teammates to reward what he did, the culture that you're building in Seattle, and attempting to win even while looking for the guy that will try to bring you a Super Bowl.
Okay.
Well, what I'm seeing that Pete Carroll, there's a quote from him, and it looks like it was from your show, I'm going to guess, or one of the shows, where he said the deal is heavily structured and that Smith himself is gambling a little bit on himself as part of this deal.
Yeah, there's a lot of incentives. Yeah, we talked to Pete at 9:30 this morning, and he was pretty fired up, excited about Geno and about getting this deal done. And I think from an ownership and a management perspective, that's exactly how they feel. Like, they secured the guy they wanted, but that also he's taking some of the risk in this incentive-laden deal. And if he hits, as I said, if he hits all those incentives and they do pay him $35 a year for 3 years, everyone will be happy, because they will be doing some significant winning.
Okay, so you said there was a possibility of them picking a quarterback with that fifth pick. I mean, but is that where the need is greatest, or do they need to beef up their defense?
Great question, because they absolutely need to beef up their defense. What they had last year was not good enough. There's no doubt about it. And there will be some dudes available, obviously, at number five that would fit that bill. Will Anderson out of Alabama could be there. Jalen Carter out of Georgia could be there. There's this kid from Texas Tech that everybody really likes. So, look, there are some possibilities. But if you have an opportunity to draft a guy that you think is a difference maker at quarterback, someone you would put on the level of Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow or any of the best quarterbacks in the game today, you got to do it. Because that is a complete game changer to your program, and it supersedes everything else.
All right, then, Mike, let's put some of your money where your mouth is. Which is it going to be? Fifth pick, do they go offensive player or do they go defensive player?
I don't know yet, Mike. I wish I could tell you with a strong prediction. I will tell you this. If they go offensive player, it will be a quarterback. I can't imagine they would spend that pick on any other offensive player. It wouldn't make any sense, and there's not really anybody in the draft that would work for them offensively. This is either they fall in love with one of these quarterbacks, Will Levis or Anthony Richardson most likely, or they love one of the defensive players, or the other possibility is they trade back a little bit, but somebody else is in love with Will Levis or one of the other quarterbacks and wants to trade up to the five pick, and you can only move down a few picks and bring in even more draft capital. So I honestly don't know. Any of those three scenarios right now seem equally plausible for the Seahawks.
Mike Salk from the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports 710. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Okay, still ahead, scenarios when we solve other people's problems. This is the G and Ursula Show. And you are listening to the G and Ursula Show. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to shake things up a little bit because we need to talk about a very important topic, and that is the question about where did all the mental health beds go? We so often talk about the mental health crises that we are dealing with in this state, but where are all the beds, and where can people go if they are dealing with mental health issues? So that is an important conversation, and we're going to be joined by a reporter from the Seattle Times who has been digging into it. But right now, it is time for scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
All right, for today's scenarios, let's turn to Ask Amy in the Washington Post for an etiquette question that I think we've all dealt with this particular issue, and we'll extend the conversation into other social etiquette problems. Here is the scenario. What words of advice would you have for addressing someone who's in a public place having a very loud, very public conversation on their phone, whether on their Bluetooth or their earbuds? I'm completely baffled as to what to say when someone does this, but I see it all the time in grocery stores, business offices, the bus, you name it. No one wants to hear it. It makes me feel awkward and uncomfortable. What should I do in this situation? Ursula Reutin, what would you do?
Okay, the times that I've encountered it, every once in a while, I will, you know, wave just to remind something. Sometimes people have to be reminded that there are people around you and you can hear. Have there been times when I've been that person who's having that conversation? Yes, and I try to abbreviate the conversations very quickly. There was one time when someone refused to help me at the counter and said, I'll wait till your conversation is done. I was like,
good for
completely
them.
Appropriate, and I get it. And it was probably that one time. After that, I just really haven't done it. I try to be much more conscious about that. So, I mean, the only thing that you can do is if it's I would probably try to ignore it unless it is really so annoying that maybe I would try to say, you know, I'm hearing everything in that conversation and you might want to keep it more private.
I've got a standard for this, actually.
Oh, a standard.
I do have
does
a standard.
Does it come on a spreadsheet?
It doesn't come on a spreadsheet, but it does come like pops into my head as soon as I hear it. One, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I think it's rude. I think it's incredibly rude. I am shocked every day watching people walk down the sidewalk shouting into their, like, you could put it up to your ear. You don't like all the shouting doesn't even need to happen to begin with. But whatever. My standard is this. If it is under a minute, I don't say a word.
Oh,
if it's something,
okay.
If I'm walking past someone, if it's a minor, if I'm in a grocery store line and you're chatting with the clerk and and people are on their phones, and I know it's going to be a relatively short period of time, I don't say anything. If I'm sitting at a table in a restaurant, and I've seen this happen, and someone is either watching videos loudly, or which just happens all the time, or somebody is like having a loud conversation, I will absolutely very politely go over there and say, hey, could you keep it down? Because I don't need to hear this while I'm sitting there enjoying, or if I'm on a bus, or if I'm on light rail or something like that. So it's length of exposure for me. That's my standard.
Okay, so a minute. You give them a minute.
Give them a minute.
How about
you get a free minute on me.
At your tavern, what do you guys do? I mean, what do you ever encounter that?
Yeah, oh yeah, we do. And if someone is doing it loudly, they're asked to like step outside and finish up whatever it is that they're doing. People don't. I mean, every now and then you watch somebody watching a loud video, like, what are you thinking? Like, no one else around here is in any way interested. But what you can do in a bar in particular is if you have the music up at a certain level, people just tend to go outside anyway.
Okay.
So I like your standard, Mike. A minute seems reasonable. I apply the same standards to car alarms in major urban centers. I believe it should be legal if a car alarm is going off in a major urban center for more than 1 minute. It should be legal for you to throw a brick through the window because nobody has a car alarm on their vehicle to deter theft. We all ignore them. I have not ever seen once in my life a car alarm go off and someone turn around and be like, where's the thief? No, they're looking at the car like, I want to kick that thing because it's still going off and it's 2 a.m. Now, back to the topic at hand.
I knew we'd get there eventually.
I wish I would confront people, but the problem is I have confronted people in the past and I've been like, hey, excuse me, you're in public. That's a little bit annoying. Can you knock it off? And then they just wave at you a middle finger. And at that point, what am I supposed to do? Go fight the guy? Like, there's not much upside to simply ignoring it. I don't think that many people... We live in a post-shame society, right? Where people don't care if they are bothering other people whatsoever. I mean, is there any upside? Mike, when you confront people about this at a restaurant or whatever, what kind of response do you get?
In a restaurant, generally pretty good, because I'm not the only person usually who's bothered. Like, you can tell other people around are bothered. I would say in certain situations on a bus, a little harder. Again, a bus can be a relatively short period of time. If I ask someone to keep it down and they don't, I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to extend the confrontation. I'm not going to allow them to ruin my day. On the other hand, most of the time, if you're nice to somebody and you're nice to them, not just being like, you're not barking at them, but you're nice to them about it, most people, 75% of the time, will absolutely realize that they have extended beyond their sort of sphere of influence.
Something that would be acceptable. Yeah. I think you're exactly right. I think it's your tone that's going to determine the reaction more often than not. But I get it. I mean, in this day and age, I mean, how many people that do we hear, you know, confront someone on the street and then it becomes a road rage incident? So you never know when something
Completely.
Could
people,
go
people
from
are
being,
very close to the snapping point
yes.
all the time out there. And so you have to be very cognizant of that.
So Darla texted in and said, I join their conversation. I give advice. I ask questions about the conversation.
I love that.
Well, I've never been one who likes to stir the pot of drama, and I'm not one to complain, but there seems to be a lot of people trying to enjoy the satisfaction of peace and quiet out there, or maybe having a private conversation with someone. So the next time you blast that latest hip-hop track without using your AirPods like you're supposed to, just take a look around to see if anyone's giving you that stink eye of death. Public perception is key, people. Don't be known as that annoyance out there. Careful.
Exactly. Good advice. Doug in Mount Vernon says, politely ask the person to put the call on speakerphone because it's rude to only eavesdrop on one side of the conversation. I love it. Okay, still ahead in our 11 o'clock hour, we are going to have a reporter from the Seattle Times. We're going to talk about a very important topic, which is the lack of mental health beds and what happened to all of them. And is there going to be a change in the near future? Because we are definitely dealing with serious mental health problems. We have a crisis on our hands, and it's scary to see how there's such a lack of mental health beds right now. That's coming up next on the G and Ursula Show.